Yeah, at least we can start with Broad Street would be good, at least.
Well, we know he shut down Swan Street years ago regarding the traffic, so it can be done then for
Broad
Street.
Now and stuff like that. Yeah. But just for the gentleman to know that it is not, I don't think that any government expects that it's people who can only afford a gasoline car to pay those prices, because at the moment in the world, it is the poor persons who have the money, who can afford it, who are actually funding the implementation and the growth of the electric car industry. So eventually, the cars will become cheaper, maybe in 10, 15 years. You know, the average person will be able to buy an electric car, but we have to move in that direction.
I agree with you that we have to start, and it's not an overnight process.
It's not an overnight thing.
Yeah, but because some people are pushing back here, or somebody's like, well, I can't afford that kind of, you know, that kind of money.
Of course, I can't afford it either. So I will wait. If I have to wait 10 or 15 years.
But what you're saying is make a plan, make a start towards a healthier environment. And I think that's really what it is. And I don't know if people really fully understand this whole concept of climate change. It really is impacting the entire world. And we need to change the things that we do and how we do it and some of the chemicals that we use. And it's a whole long conversation, but it's
The climate change conversation is a whole other whole other category.
But you got to do it bit by bit, you know?
Yes.
Bit by bit. But
I
enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you so much.
All right.
This is Down to Brass Tacks, 1143. You are on the air. Good morning.
I know that I'm watching the clock, and I'm watching what I have to discuss with you.
Okay.
I like to discuss matters of national interest that affects all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I listened to a discussion this morning in relation to the beach, in relation to what is happening on the beach. And I also heard when you mentioned about... Well, what we can say with properties within the island that can be used for the purpose of greening hotels.
Yeah.
I know at the present moment that the Barbados Trust, at least once a month, they do open various houses in various parts of the great houses in various parts of the island. But what they call about Joanne this morning is that only this week, I think I heard the Minister of Tourism saying that the Trust, in terms of money earning, would be tourism ministry this time around. I think I heard that. And you and I know that that is a very serious comment. We have this belief that we've got the best beaches in the world or the best beaches in the Caribbean. Joanne, if you take the scouting for vacation spot and you're looking for some place where beaches are concerned, Barbados does not even credit itself of having 10 of the best beaches. When you look on the internet, you can pick up 10 of the best beaches across the world on Barbados.
Very true. Very true.
Barbados is not one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also of the opinion that we are taking advantage. And the only way we are taking advantage, we have all legislation that needs to be readjusted. For example, I think that when you look at town country planning, and I said this before, when you look at tourism, maritime industry, maritime ministry, and when you look at national conservation, and you also look at national housing, Joanne, there is a clash between these industries in this day and time in relation to what Barbados should produce and what Barbados need to have in order. It don't make sense saying that tourism is all business, and then we have Barbadians become hostile to tourists, like how it happened in one of the Caribbean countries sometime back. We need to continue our general approach to tourism so that the tourists will continue to say that Barbadians are friendly and that Barbados is a beautiful place to visit. But if we continue going down this road, that we are separating the friendliness of the Barbadians from the visitor who seem over the years to believe that not only visiting Barbados, but they want to purchase a property in Barbados. They want to live in Barbados. We are dooming ourselves as far as the minister's statement that the trust would be on tourism in this coming year. I believe there's a need for the ministries to sit down and solve the problems of the beach. And the ministries, Ministry of National Tourism Ministry, looking at the Ministry of Housing and Lands, you're looking at tourism, you're looking at maritime. And you're of the opinion that, yes, there's a need for development, but not that Barbados should become second class in their own developing countries. Mm-hmm. Now, if you check most of these properties that are going up on the South Coast, and I pray, honest to God, that we are not trying to create what we're looking for, a tsunami in years to come because of things that would happen along the way. I think we have to understand that as people, we need to survive as people and not survive separate. Now, when you look at most of the development from the South Coast all the way down Joanne, they're providing beach access. Yeah. But what type of beach access? They're providing what can be considered as a pedestrian access. The government of Barbados, under the Barbados Labour Party, and its status can be proud of creating a parking beach at Brighton where you can take your family, you could go and park under the beach, under the trees at Brighton, and enjoy the beautiful scenery of the beach. Now, when you look at the South Coast coming down, and you then look at the area of Bounds Beach, and you look all the way down, you are going to be subtracting from people who enjoy the atmosphere of the beach, either some form of recreation or some form of understanding that to sit down and watch the sea for hours is a refreshing mental situation. I am appealing to the ministries responsible. Now is the time to move that old and created legislation and make Barbadians feel wanted. Make Barbadians feel like they're part of any tourist industry. And this idea that allowing developers to come through the back door and allowing developers to get things because the law allows it cannot work. It cannot work. And I'm saying that when you look at the South Coast and you call the way down to the West Coast and you understand exactly what the plans are for, let's say, Bay Street, and then you understand the families that live within the landmass, and that the people who frequent the beach at Bounds Beach, because it's the only place they can go, then you are taking those people away from the roots. When you come beyond the flour mill, and you look at Brighton, you look at the West Coast, you really understand fully that you are taking those people from along that area as well, from enjoying a facility that, truthfully speaking, several people would love to enjoy. So my plea this morning is that we need the developers. We need the developers. But we need for the ministers of government to understand that the interlock of the ministries need to look at tourism and need to look at the requirements for the Barbadians in the area of tourism, which includes transportation, which includes the whole chain transformation of Bridgetown, and making it what we consider to be the Barbados that every single Barbadian will understand. This is the Barbados I want, not the Barbados I don't want. Because at that point, then you then become very anti-tourist. Anti-tourist. So my plea this morning, I've listened to it, there's so much I can talk, but I'd rather not do it. But my plea this morning is to ask the cabinet, the ministries responsible, to listen to the voices of the people. And if there's room to correct some of the laws and legislation in between there as far as the beach is concerned, as far as developing is concerned, as far as work is concerned, then you have no problem. But this idea of people complaining that they can't walk a beach can't continue. This idea of people complaining this and can't continue, because we need the tourists. And the minister said it, the trust this year beyond tourism. So I am putting it on him. And I'm also put it on the Minister of Maritime Affairs. And also put it on the Minister of Housing, not National Housing, the Minister of Lands and Housing, that they understand fully, and the Attorney General, because if these things become very annoying, then it creates problems for the Attorney General and police in the country. So all I'm saying is that we've got a product, but we've now started to grate up the cake in little chips and pieces that will not serve us at all. We need to bring the cake back on the table and understand fully that we are supposed to benefit by tourism, because this is the only way we can go now, having placed sugar at the back doors. I believe the time has come for us to understand fully we are all in it together. We are all in it together, and tourism is our business. Am I wrong, Ray?
You are right. I want to read this WhatsApp that someone said here. I hope we all recognize that green tourism is not just about constructing hotels with natural landscapes. Indeed, We would indeed, would we want to further diminish the natural relativity, unspoiled and increasingly shrinking landscape in our countryside? We also have to consider the impacts of mass tourism on delicate ecosystems, including gully systems, and discuss the effects that extensive construction may have on the aesthetics of these areas. This is a reason such construction is limited in areas such as the Scotland District. It is important that we make sure we understand what green tourism is before we call for certain things. On another point, I feel like we need to have a discussion about how Bajans relate to their vehicles, et cetera, et cetera. But what I'm in my mind, and again, about green tourism, I certainly would not want to see anything out of concrete jungle in Barbados in terms of in the countryside. You're looking at things out of wood and certainly not cementing everywhere and taking away from what the whole green aspect of things should be. But you have other spaces that you can utilize for hotels, and it doesn't always have to be the beach. And as Mark said, and I totally agree, there's some beaches all over the world that Barbados would not even come near to. And it's not that we don't have beautiful beaches. I think we have a lot more to offer than just the beach, and we should look to promote that as well. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air, 11:53. Nope, we're going to have to take a break, and we'll be back after the regional roundup. Welcome back. It's now 8 minutes after the hour of 12. Good afternoon.
Yes. Good afternoon.
Yes. Go ahead.
I missed the first hour and a half of the program, but I get the impression that there were some comments on beach access and related tourism matters. I've spent 42 years of my life working in and around tourism, so I wish to share some experiences with you and our listeners.
Go ahead.
The biggest hindrance to beach access in Barbados are not the hotels. It is the private residences. Hotels want people on the beach because hotels have beach bars and beach restaurants, and they're looking for patronage. So hotels encourage people to come to the beach and traverse the beaches. They don't want to hinder people from coming onto a beach because they recognize that the beaches in Barbados are public, and they want to utilize every opportunity they can get to get people into their facilities. So I wish people would stop accusing the hotels. The bulk of the problems is with the private home owners who have beachfront properties. Now, Barbados as a country has built a reputation for tourism, has built up a tourism industry based on the friendliness of the people, the stability of the government, the fact that we can change governments overnight and a big rock don't get thrown. People look at that. Reliable infrastructure. The issues we had with the South Coast Source Project was a little damper. That seemed to be behind us. I hope the issues with the Barbados Light and Power, those 2 days of blackouts, is a thing behind us, because that can have an impact. People come to Barbados because they can sit in their homes, in their hotel rooms or their villas or wherever, and make a long-distance call to any part of the world. And the fact that there's no load shedding. You go to the Dominican Republic, up to now, not 2020, up to 2019, there were some resorts down there. Beautiful resorts, but challenges with electricity. Now, I agree with Mr. Williams. He called earlier, and he talked about updating the legislation as it relates to beach and beach access and so on. And I agree with him, because under the Parks and Beaches, the old Parks and Beaches Commission Act relating to beaches, a beach extended 100 feet inland from the high water mark. Now, the high water mark is a nebulous thing because the high water mark changes with the tides. Mm-hmm. Every 11, 12, 13 hours, you get a tide shift in Barbados. So every 11 or 12 hours, the high water mark in Barbados changes, and that has an impact on what is a beach. Now, so yes, we need to relook at the legislation and change that.
May I 1 second? When you mentioned that the hotels, it's really the private homes, and the hotels want people to access the beach, you're referring to tourists, but what I think we're talking about is the locals.
I talk about people. Local people got money to spend too.
But how many local people are we? Go ahead.
We just got this thing that hotels don't belong to them. That hotels are only there for tourists. That is a myth that needs to be dispelled.
But can I ask, is it that Bajans feel that way or the hoteliers make them feel that way?
Well, there was a case where a hotel made some local Barbadians feel that way, and the hotel feel it in the pocket of the High Court. The Hilton, 2 years ago, were prosecuted for ignoring Barbadians who had gone there for service, and they had to pay the High Court a certain amount of damages. So the message is getting out. When a person goes into a hotel, the way people are traveling nowadays, 30 years ago, most of the tourists coming into Barbados were white. That more diverse tourists are traveling. CARICOM is the fourth largest producer of tourism arrivals into Barbados. How many people are the CARICOM white?
No, I mean, I'm hearing you. It'd be interesting to hear now in 2020 staycations and how people feel when they get there. A lot of people enjoy their staycations, and a lot of people reported that they were treated with the respect.
This is a great marketing tool, and should be expanded more. More hotels should get involved in staycations.
Yes, but we don't want to be treated that way only for a staycation. If we just want to go to the bar, the hotel, to have a drink, are we treated with the same?
When a person goes to a bar or goes to a restaurant and orders a meal and takes out his family for dinner, costs him $600 or $700, the money don't go down who black and who white.
Well, true. But I must say that some of our own people, or according to one of the callers, people that look like us, may have a tendency to treat locals a little bit different than they treat tourists, and they then brand tourists as people of Caucasian race, and that is something.
Not, honestly, Ms. Higg, that has not been my experience after 37 years working in hotels. It has not been my experience.
And restaurants.
Restaurants has not been my experience.
But let me just say this, because I said this before and I'll say it again. It was my experience at one restaurant a couple of years ago. And if you want to call it two flies in milk, because, you know, we were surrounded by tourists. And the young lady in question brought my food. She brought my food over, and she didn't give the gentleman I was there with a dark skin color, dark, dark, dark. And she said, when I asked, you know, where's the other order? She said, and I quote, "Well, I thought when it was sharing." I said, "Excuse me?"
Ridiculous. That is a lack of training.
Right. Well, I don't know if training would be the word here. It doesn't sound like she can't be trained. However, the individual was removed off the floor. And I must say management came in and said, but you could see from her actions moving around, she was more interested in the tourists and pouring their water. And we drank ours and we didn't even get a refill. So I don't know if they thought that the tip wasn't going to be great.
That's bad service. And then if that person is untrainable, then they should not be in the hospitality industry. There should be some risk. If you, and I've said this to employees and my subordinates over the years, and I say to students at the Hospitality Institute, if you do not like people, do not join the hospitality industry. It is about people, whether they're white, black, yellow, or green. If you do not like interacting with people, then you do not belong to the hospitality industry. I work with a general manager, and she said, give me the attitude, give me the spirit, give me the outlook on life, the positive outlook on life. I will do the rest. So you can come with all the academics, but if you come in with a sour face, you aren't going to last too long. You aren't getting a second interview. Mm-hmm. Anyway, a few more points I wish to make quickly. We talk about green tourism, and I agree with your comment that green tourism isn't only about building a hotel and having a lot of bush around it. Green tourism relates to proper recycling methods. It relates to how you dispose of your sewage, whether you have a tertiary sewage system. It talks about water, st- storage, harvesting, retention. It talks about electricity, solar heating, solar panel electricity, saving, conservation, and conservation being a big, big part of the entire greening process. There's an organization that gives you certification called Green Globe Certification, and there are one or two hotels in Barbados that are Green Globe certified. And you go through a process, then you get an audit, you get the certification, and I think every year or every 2 years, they come back and do an audit to make sure that you're sticking and that you're meeting the standards that are set. Mm-hmm. Now, my final point is, sometime late last year, I believe, an article came out in the Daily newspaper, I believe it was The Nation, and the headline was High Rises for the City. And it listed a number of development, hotels, tourism-related, and other developments, including 25-story buildings and 16-story and 7-story and so on. I don't have the article in front of me right now, but it listed a whole set of articles, a set of buildings, and with the projected number of rooms that each of these projects should have. My concern is about the density. And I talk about density in relation to what the environment can carry, whether the resources, the infrastructure resources in terms of our water and so on, can carry, can meet those things. Because in October, on October 10th last year, and this date stuck with me, on October 10th, 2019, we had received in Barbados 50% less rain than we had received up to that date in 2018. I am yet to hear any official response as to what we're going to do to come to that. I heard talk about 2 desalination plants, but I've heard that talk before. So that is a concern. What are we going to do about traffic? If you build a hotel with 320 rooms...
Okay, we jumped from the water to... Okay, I just want to make sure you're going to another topic now. We got to wrap up this last one. Go ahead.
Yeah. If we build a hotel with 320 rooms in a place like Bay Street, which is one of the major arteries into the commercial center into Bridgetown, what plan? And we talk about 5 or 6 hotels between the Drill Hall and Pierhead. What plans are we going to put in place or have been put in place? Has any study been done as to the traffic, a traffic study, to move these people, these visitors? You're going to have a lot of staff working. Because if you build a 300-room hotel, conservatively, you're going to need to hire 360, 370 people. A lot of those people will probably have their own vehicles. What is the traffic plan that is going to be put in place to move all these people into that small area? So I'm hoping that, yes, we talk about the high rises for the city, and they all look good, and some of them are some very interesting developments. I wish I had some money in that thing, because I would certainly invest in the Gemma's Lane Wellness Center and so on, and help build up the health tourism aspect of it. And one final point, short point, heritage tourism is the fastest growing market segment for tourists, especially in the people between 35 and 65. Now, we're licking down a lot of our older buildings and giving all kind of crazy excuses. But there are 3 examples I wish to draw to the public's attention in terms of heritage tourism. The Barbados Light and Power head office building in the Garrison. The area around the Jewish synagogue in Bridgetown. How that area has been redeveloped and looking really, really smart. And the third one, excuse me, I'll get back to it. I'll get back to it another time. Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much. I want to read this WhatsApp quickly. The person says, Joanne, the caller who was ranting about electrical cars missed several pertinent points. Electrical cars allow for greater disposal income and through the savings on fossil fuels i.e. gasoline, diesel, etc. Those savings can be targeted to address the caller's arbitrary 20 years battery replacement by planning for the replacement. Simple arithmetic says if gasoline costs per week is $200 times 4 weeks equals $800 times 12 months, that's $9,600 times 20 years equals $192,000 in savings. This can easily allow for better living plus battery replacement. So they went on to say battery retailers will also have the option to induce sales, just like the car dealers, by using the monthly installments and balloon payments model. This is not a poor man's issue. Poor people take the bus. But suffice to say, if the poor man can purchase a car, he has maintenance costs, insurance, fuel costs, weekly, etc. Electrical cars would be better financially beneficial to him. I'm often not convinced when I hear some of these calls. No serious person can want fossil fuels to remain when we know how much damage it does to the environment and to human life. This is Down to Brass Tacks, 1223. You are on the air. Good afternoon. Go ahead. Brass Tacks.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to come in. It would take me a little bit longer, but first thing, the caller who spoke about the solar cars and despised solar cars obviously does not done his research. Actually, an internal combustion engine using fossil fuel does most of the energy, 80% of the energy goes out to the exhaust and into the radiator as heat. You only get about 20% efficiency. When solar panels first came about, solar cells, they were called, or they used to be called sun batteries, you got about 30% efficiency. Today, we get as high as 23% efficiency. The technology is moving ahead. The thing about it is that on a one square meter, a meter is roughly 39 inches. So if you put 39 by 39, you'll see how many square inches you get. On a good day, you will get about 1 kilowatt, 1,000 watts to 1,400 watts of power coming onto that cell from the sun in Barbados, provided that you have the thing properly located to take massive reflection. Out of that, you're now getting as high as 23%. So that means that if you're getting 20%, you'll get 20% of 1,000. So the technology is going. The whole point of this, if you're going to have a car powered by electricity, the wise thing to do as the technology goes on is to put up your solar cells and charge the battery from it, to avoid having to go to the company which is producing most of the electricity from fossil fuels, which does a lot of damage to the atmosphere. My contention is, whether we like it or not, electric cars are going to outstrip the internal combustion car. It's going to happen, whether we like it, because as the other caller said, as production increases, as efficiencies come about, the cost of a car will drop. There was a time when the car was first invented in the early, very early 1900s, that only maybe less than 1% of the population could ever think of owning a car. Nowadays, anyone can own a car. And that is likely to happen with electric cars also. So I hear all these arguments there, and I think those people who come in the air should do their research and then really inform the public. Because all this talk about the batteries costing so much, yes, they cost that much, no. But you cannot stop the march of technology, and I will predict that in the next 10 years, the price of the batteries will drop dramatically. Duran, you know, in your young days, I would suggest that your parents couldn't afford a TV set. But now you can buy 2 or 3 TV sets. And this is what is going to happen with technology. As more players, as the technology advances, the cost will come down to make it affordable to demand the street.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But before you go on, you can say the same thing for cell phones. You remember when they first came on the market, we couldn't afford cell phones. They're those big, bulky things for $2,000 and $3,000. And now you can. So you're correct. Televisions are cheaper now than they were before when flat screens first came out. So you're correct. The batteries eventually would be able to afford batteries eventually.
Yes. Now, the other point you want to make, and I'm going to make this because I do not think many Barbadians understand this. The art tourism, as we practice it now, is not sustainable. What we're doing in tourism is not sustainable because everything has a carrying capacity. If we keep putting more and more cars on this limited space, you know what will eventually happen. And likewise, this is where we're heading with our tourism. We are putting in more and more hotels because it's the easiest thing to do. I admire the governor of the central bank for making the statements he made. But we know, unless we look at the carrying capacity of this country, we are going to come to a point where the returns are going to be negative. For instance, we have a limited amount of water here, water from the aquifers. If we go to desalination, we have to find the energy to pay for that desalination. We put more tourist traffic on the roads, you're going to damage roads, you're going to have to put in more roads, and it's going to cost.
Could you stick a pin?
Sure.
When you say that, I understand, but where is the money going to come from to do all of these things if you know that tourism is our greatest earner of income?
At the moment it is. What I'm saying, you have to extract more from what you have. A small country like this that has no real vast areas that are undeveloped, you're going to come to a bottleneck sooner or later.
Okay, well, we do have to now take a break for the latest. You can stay on the line and continue, or call us back. Welcome back. It's 12:44. Good afternoon. Down to Brown
Stats.
Hello,
how are you? I'm back here.
Yes, sir. Continue.
Now, I made a statement, and I think you heard me. I said that our present, the way we conduct our tourism is not sustainable. One, we have limited land space. And the most viable land we have is our beaches. I heard Mr. Mark Whitten speak about these, and I think some attention to be paid to what he said. Good. Now, if you keep on introducing tourists every year, 6%, 10% or whatever, more and more people, what happens? First, it's going to have a tremendous impact on your ground transportation. You would not be able to drive 2 miles into Bridgetown without taking a whole hour or half hour to do so. Second thing, the crucial element of water. We only have so much groundwater, and I understand that we're now going into a period of drought. You know what that means. So the easy solution is to get desalination plants. But most of those things require some type of fuel, mainly fossil fuel, to get them running. And therefore, your foreign exchange then has to be to go out to support this generation of the water. Mm-hmm. Next thing, and this is another crucial element that I don't think about, is waste disposal. And we have two types of waste, basically. The sewage, which is the liquid waste, and then we have the solid waste. The solid waste, we have seen, we just dump it into quarries or quarries or holes in the ground, and we think that we have disposed of it. As you know, any matter, mostly vegetable matter, or human excrement, human bodies, whatever, that goes into that waste will generate something, methane, which is a gas that can be used for burning in your stove. But instead of burning our stove, what happens, it starts as the sun, we live in the tropical area, the sun generates heat. The gas then starts to combust, and it starts to burn. What happens, we call the fire service out, and they may spend maybe a whole week dumping water on it. You dump water on that waste, but what happens, as soon as the water leaches down out of the thing, the gas is still there, and the gas ignites again. The answer to that, and I don't know that we have made any attempt to deal with it, the technology exists where you can put special pipes into the ground that will take the gas off, and you can use the gas. You can sell it. You can use it to for your cooking or whatever. But that, the technology exists now. We should not continue to just dump our breaths that we don't need into these big holes and think that's the end of it. It is, that is also unsustainable. Sewage. we go and we don't have anywhere on land to put the water we generate, and we don't try to clean it to reuse it for, like, agriculture or whatever. It's perfectly good water. You don't have to take out the solids. You cannot remove the chemicals, but at least you can still use it for something. But instead, now, the little fishing industry we have, we go and dump that somewhere out the sea and say, well, we've solved the problem. It will come back to haunt us at some time. So what I'm saying is there must be a plan to look at the carrying capacity of this country, develop a plan to extract more money from each person coming in this country, rather than thinking, okay, we'll expand our tourist efforts so we get more people coming in, and we don't think that everybody you introduce to this island generates liquid waste, generates solid waste, uses our transportation system, and all the things that one person has to use, which means we have to provide those things, and we can then have the social element of it. You have too many people living in a confined place, you're going to get social problems. And I see it happening already at the sea. It's only a matter of time before we get conflicts on our beaches.
But before you go on, don't go, because I'm just trying to keep up with you and understand when you say that we have to be careful bringing in so many tourists. Because we you're talking about the fact that we don't have enough water, for example, and there's a lot more output of the sewage, et cetera. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. That's partially correct. Go ahead.
Okay. And we also talked about fuel and having to import, and we will need foreign exchange. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And the foreign exchange comes from the tourists.
So yeah, but what I'm saying, what... If we bring in 1 million people here on boats and by air or whatever,
mm-hmm.
how much, what is their contribution? Take, for example, we have not done a study, as far as I know, what an additional tourist produces, how much money they spend. What is the spend of the average tourist here? Are we increasing it? Is it decreasing with the rise in this other phenomenon we call the all-inclusive, which mm-hmm. is another big topic?
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying, we need not the study that was done recently by the tourist people, mm-hmm. a comprehensive study to look at the carrying capacity of this country, look at the economic impacts, and then discuss these things. Where are we going? Because if we just continue the way we're doing without any detailed plan, on a small island like ours, you know what is going to be outcome.
Mm-hmm. But I guess we should balance it then. We should encourage more and more tourists.
Yes.
Well, I think...
It's not what, more and more tourists.
You don't. That's why I'm trying to...
Spain.
But that's the thing. If there's a shortfall and we have 1 million tourists, but we don't have to spend to go along with the amount of people, where then do we make up for the shortfall of the foreign exchange?
I'm saying that is where it becomes unsustainable, because you still have to provide all the things I mentioned for these people, and they're not making an adequate contribution, so it is mm-hmm. not sustainable. I hope mm-hmm. I make my point.
I understand you. I don't fully agree with the theory, because no. I remember in 2009, and actually I was sitting on the other side of this, and Corey was actually the moderator, and the water bills went up by 60%. And the argument then was, but why raise it before you fix it? And my argument was, and still remains, in order, you need money in order to fix it. So really and truly, you have to do both. You can't exactly say, I'm not going to increase the water rates because I don't deliver the service. And the reason I can't deliver the service is because, you know, I can't fix the pipes. But you have to increase things. So in this case, with what you're saying, you should increase the amount of tourists, even if the spend is not what you think it is. You certainly still ensure you do your marketing, but at the same time, you try to increase then the social services, improve rather, the social service.
Well, I beg to disagree.
Where are you going
to
get the money from?
What I am saying is you have a carrying capacity. Beyond that, there is a point where you get no returns. The returns are negative. Try to establish what our carrying capacity is. Try to establish what we're getting from the tourist, each tourist that comes in here? Is it adding something to our economy or is it detracting? And then how could we increase the tourist spend? This question of the water that you made, you have to increase the value, the price of the water, because you have to secure the plant or whatever it is. The truth about it, we have discovered that you work there at that water authority, and there were a lot of inefficiencies. Nobody thinks about this, but there are inefficiencies that caused prices to go up. And I believe the first thing before you start charging people more for everything, look and see where the inefficiencies. I understand that the present minister has done an excellent job in reducing some of the contracts that seem to have been really inexplicable. Things like that you do before you come and dump it on the people who live in the country, who then have to welcome tourists, and they are feeling the pinch. What I'm saying, we have to gear our tourism to suit the current capacity, make sure that the people who come here are paying their fair share. We don't want all of these all-inclusive things that we really have not estimated. I don't know if that study's been done, what the return is we're getting from these things. Of course, the people who build them, who have them, find them very attractive. That's why they're building them. But in terms of the people of this country, whether it is something that is going to help us is a big question. If a study has been done, I would like to know. I would like to know about it.
Okay.
I hope I made myself
Yes, you
clear.
Did. I guess we could still compare it to, or should I say, the whole freedom of movement of people, the CSME. What is our current capacity to for that as well? Because it's not, the tourists come and they go for a couple of days, but if you're talking about people relocating in another country, of course, we still have to look at our social services too as well, and to see what kind of financial input that they will be making, contribution they will be making to improve the economy while we try to increase the population. It's one of those discussions where you have to balance it, I think. You're correct. We do have to look at our carrying capacity, but on the same token, right now we need them, and we need a lot of them. But you're saying to do a study to see whether or not we need to create more avenues to get more, extract more money from the tourists to see if it's beneficial to the country. As I guess that's what you're saying in a nutshell. But I want to thank you. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air. Good afternoon. Yes, I am. Go ahead.
Yes, good day. How are you?
I am well, and you? Wait, can I say something, Dennis? Have you noticed something that I can't recall hearing any female callers at all? Okay, 12:55, no female callers today. 12:55, you're on the air.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir.
I'm following on. I did not hear the whole program through the morning, but what I heard piqued my interest following an experience I had on the 21st of January, which was the last bank holiday we had. And this is in relation to beach access and so on. I parked in the aquatic yacht and chose to walk along the coastline towards the boardwalk. Don't walk through there, and I am on the beach. I said, sir, what's your problem? Just don't walk near those tourists. You need to walk by the water mark. I said, sir, do you know what the high water mark is? He says, yes, it's down there. That's where the high tide comes. I said, high water has nothing to do with high tide. The man is absolutely ignorant as to what, and he even went on to say, I am a JP.
Oh, dear.
Anyhow, I just wanted to say that there is a lot of ignorance, and clearly somebody put him to do a job down there to protect tourists, maybe from harassment. But to just tell people don't walk on the beach is absolutely sickening. And I was actually very sickened by the experience, and I think we need to be very guarding of this matter.
And it's somebody who's a local who told us that, and not...
yes, it is
exactly.
It's a local man.
Exactly.
And he's regarding the high water mark as the high tide mark. He doesn't have a clue. And he wants to vehemently defend his position. So, I mean, I had to show him, you know, sir, you should not be telling anybody. Don't walk on the beach. If you see anybody harassing the tourists, you can approach them and quietly tell them, sir, don't harass the tourists. But certainly, I am walking on the beach, and he's telling me, no, you have to walk down by the tree, down by the water. So this is not funny.
No, and, but somebody needs to, and you know what? You can't even blame him either, because he was working in an establishment and no one educated him as to what the functions of his job. I find that some security guards are not going off track here in general, and I have a lot of respect for them. I think that they're not properly trained. I think that people just pick people off the street, and if they got a good certificate of character, then they just put them there. There's no training, no formal training, no military training, something. It's almost like this guy stands there. Some of them, and note I said some, have attitude problems, like the one that you have there. And there are others that if you just go like, boo, you know, they jump. In other words, you're going like, why do you have this person here in charge of or making sure that you're okay when he doesn't look capable? And then the others, in your case, clearly don't have any manners. And some of them have this sense of, oh, you know, I can tell you what to do, you know, type of thing. And you have to listen. I've had some bad experiences with some security guards in a government establishment where I had to sign the book. And because I didn't put the initials, I wrote it out where exactly which floor I was going and who I was going to see. So, no, you can't do it that way. You have to put the initials. So I politely gave him the book and said, if you wish to put the acronyms, please be my guest. But I'm going upstairs. And I left it at that because I would have thought signing it and letting you know exactly where I'm going to be in this building would be good enough. So again, there's some with a chip on their shoulder, but I'm sorry to hear that that guard did that. I think we had some skits. I remember Tubby the guard on CBC TV when you were talking about tourism as our business. And I can't remember it fully, but someone can call and remind us. But they were talking about this very same thing and security guards treating people with respect, the tourists and the locals. But, you know, unfortunately, one has to ask, would that guy, if you were a tourist or looked like a tourist, would he have taken that same approach?
No, he wasn't going to tell me anything. He wasn't going to tell me anything because he presumed that I was going to harass his visitors immediately. And I thought that that was grossly insulting and character profiling just because of the color of my skin. And but I also am sympathetic with his ignorance. We have a serious problem with people who lack discernment, and he's going to vehemently defy something that he thinks he knows, which is the high water mark, and he doesn't understand the difference between high water and high tide. Anyhow, thank you for
I want to thank you for sharing that with us, Stu. Thank you so much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. It's 1 p.m. You're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Joanne. Good afternoon to every person. All I want to say, I'm very glad I get enough to that gentleman to you, is that sometimes it isn't that they are ignorant to the fact, and this is something that no, you or a gentleman did not put into play. It could be that they were instructed to do that. Not that they're ignorant of it, you know.
No, but sir, where were you? No. Where were you when we said that somebody, and we gave in, we said we can't blame him. You know, you forgot that sentence?
No, you all said, right, that they're ignorant to the fact that don't have this and don't have
we
that.
We also said that, but we also mentioned the possibility of he was instructed, you can't blame him. Maybe someone.
But I didn't hear that. I missed that.
Okay.
I missed that then. Right. So listen to me. If they're instructed because of their job, and they are given certain rules and regulations they feel that they must follow. That's what I want you all to highlight, which means you all should go to the establishments and make sure that they know, because those persons know the high water mark. And what they does sometimes is instruct persons who are working for them to do certain things. Thank you anyway.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I'm sorry that you didn't hear the full contribution of the gentleman, but I know he did mention that as a possibility too as well. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Joanne.
Good afternoon, first lady caller for the day.
Yes. I want to know, did you listen to Minister Humphrey talking about the offshore islands
nope.
in the sea?
Nope.